You're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more you're listening to CPA Review, and more. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're joining from. And thank you for listening to this episode of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. I'm your producer and director here at the Yeager Studios, Rob Medford. And together, we are bringing you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you're new to the show, I'd like to be the first to thank you for checking us out. We're excited to have you as part of our listenership. If you're here because you've already heard our show and you're a continued listener, we thank you for the ongoing support. It's always greatly appreciated. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about what Yeager CPA Review has to offer, check out our website at yeagercpareview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you might have. The link and telephone number will be in the description of this episode. Here at Team Yeager, we're excited to tell you about our new Yeager CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new, month-to-month, no long-term commitment subscription format. But without any further delay, I'm going to pass the microphone on over to your host, Billy Yeager.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. And today on our podcast, you know, we scan the globe looking for interesting guests. I told you that before. And also different areas that you could go into if you're tired of your job. So if you're actually a cashier at Walmart and you want to go into accounting, let me give you another area you can go into. Is that true? Okay, now let's move on. For those who didn't get that joke, forget it. All right. Today I have my guest, Donnie Shimamoto. Did I get that right?
Pretty close. Shimamoto.
All right. Donnie is generally based out of Hawaii, but today, because he's such a world traveler, he's in Houston, Texas, and he is a non-traditional CPA. Now, why do you call yourself a non-traditional CPA? Donnie, tell us about that.
I call myself a non-traditional CPA because I don't do audit, tax, or bookkeeping. I actually only do IT advisory services. Which is actually, when you look at all the CPA stuff, they're telling everyone, this is where you need to be. You need to be an advisory. Well, my firm has actually been doing IT advisory services for the last 18 years. So maybe we're a little ahead of the curve, but that's why it's non-traditional. But that also, it doesn't mean that I don't have the background on the other ones. I was actually an accounting and MIS double major. And when I first started off in accounting, I was actually in both financial audit and IT audit. So start off in the audit side and then switched over to consulting or advisory. It's now often.
Now, did you start this company yourself or did you acquire or enter into a relationship with an existing company?
This is the company I started myself. So I actually spent the first 3 years of my full-time career with PwC. I was in a small office in Honolulu. So got to work with a lot of different organizations and varieties of industries, and I actually switched during that time to report over to Virginia, and they told me if I wanted to move up, I would have to move to Virginia. I said, no, thank you. I'll stay in Hawaii, and ended up leaving the firm and starting my own.
What's wrong with Virginia? God, it's so, nothing, you know, I live near Virginia, you know that.
Oh, you do? Really?
Yeah.
No.
Maryland.
For one.
With Virginia, though. Virginia's a big state. Where did they want you to move to?
That would have been Falls Church, Virginia, which I will say is pretty pretty. I've been there a couple times, but I'm not, you know, coming from Hawaii, definitely not a cold weather guy.
All right. So you're in advisory services, and you're saying that you were on the audit staff of which, I'm sorry, was it PwC?
PwC, and I'll date myself. Actually, when I started, it was actually Coopers & Lybrand.
So oh my gosh.
I got to see them go through the merger and be part of that. Yeah.
How did that help you get, I mean, what made you decide to go into advisory services?
I'm actually going to say in my heart that I've always been kind of a consultant, because even starting in college, I used to work on campus, and I already had the IT skill sets. I already could do some application development, some programming. And even in my student positions, you know, part-time, I would look at things and be like, wow, that doesn't make sense. Let's make this more efficient. And so I would work on that type of stuff. And so I did an internship on campus at one of the small, actually not so small, nonprofits that was nearby. And then I also did an internship at PwC itself in the Lulu office in their IT department. And in the IT department, I was helping to like build some applications that, for example, track CPE and training requirements. And so then from the audit side, where I got my background in the actual financial accounting, actually got to the point of issuing financial statements or preparing the financial statements for signature. The IT side, I got to look at the risk and what was going on there and how do we mitigate systems risk, which cybersecurity is the huge thing right now. So that's tied back to there. I actually got pulled onto this work assignment that was going on at Pearl Harbor. And what we were doing was we were actually helping the Pacific Fleet look at their administrative processes. So not the warfighting itself, but all the administrative processes supporting the warfighting and figuring out how do we help automate more of this. And this is in the late 1990s. So it was the start of the like ASP 2.0 had come out. So it was just at the start of web programming and
what's
things.
ASP?
Active server pages.
Okay. All right.
Which I don't think you even hear that anymore.
No, I don't think so, but.
But yeah, it was the start of the web, really web applications and things. And so that's what we were working on was web applications and helping to bring those into the Navy. And fun fact for that one, I actually got, as an accountant or as an advisory accountant, I actually got to go on an aircraft carrier for a week. And we boarded on shore in San Diego and it flew out into the San Diego, or it, I guess, drove out into the San Diego Gulf. And we actually spent a week, a team of us spent a week on that carrier, just like we were one of the officers, and we were actually going and implementing solutions there. So got to hear night ops, got to see night ops where they're like shooting the jets off of the aircraft carrier. And fun enough too, I actually got to get catapulted off. So it's a super intense rush where you're in this plane, you're actually sitting backwards because that's actually more safe. And they literally catapult you. And it's, I forget what they said, it's 2 G's or something like that of force as you leave the aircraft carrier because you don't have the runway to gather all the speed. So they just catapult them off. Landed back on land in San Diego and had the sea legs where I couldn't actually walk straight. It was so funny. But, you know, great experience to be in the military without having actually been in the military through part of this career.
I think I'd be afraid of that because I don't even like zip lines. No, I won't go on a zip line. But anyway, now, take me through this whole thing with your education or anybody. Let's assume that I don't want to be on the audit staff. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't like the audit staff because it's very detailed. Mm-hmm. I like tax returns, but that has details too. Mm-hmm. But anyway, advisory. I think it might be my area because I like to talk to people. I like to advise them and give them ideas, changes in their systems, whatever. All right. Yeah. How do you get that from the point of you? First of all, what do you major in college? Just accounting?
So I was in accounting and management information systems double. So I completed both. The accounting side gives me the transactions, the understanding of what's going on in finance. The information systems, and this is the information systems versus the computer science side. So computer science side is actually more of the programming and what I think of as the lower end part of the IT realm. The information systems, and specifically management information systems, really looks at how does technology support the operations of a business? How do we structure data so that data is usable and can be used, for example, for reporting or that I can perform analytics on it? So it's the merger of that management information systems with the accounting side that then lets me look at the flow of information and the way that processes operate in an organization. And that's being combined with my knowledge or my experience doing financial audit and learning more about internal controls, how to build good internal controls, basically things that make sure that the data is accurate, complete, and all these other great financial statement assertion things, as well as to help identify things that can help prevent fraud or error from entering into it as well. So I couldn't do what I do today without the foundation and audit. And I actually did audit for about a year and a half, to really be able to do that. The other thing the audit really gave me was the visibility to different or the exposure to different industries and different organizations within the same industry. So I was able to see how perhaps the same problem was solved in different ways. And a lot of what I do in consulting today is really about looking for patterns. And so I'm looking for patterns in a problem that a client is trying to solve. And I'm going through my mind and thinking like, what other things have I seen that behave in this way? Or what other things have, how have I seen other organizations solve this problem? And so that's a lot of what I do in my advisory.
You went to the University of Hawaii?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Did they have practical knowledge or are they just academics?
So there was a mix, I will say. So on the information systems side, I had a couple of them that were more academic. And they actually taught more of the theoretical ones, like process diagramming and that kind of. One of my great professors, and I'll send a shout out to her, is Hong Mei Chen. And she was the one that taught database. And database is really the foundation for a lot of what we're in data analytics and everything else that's going on. She actually gave us a great hands-on. She was known as like the toughest and the hardest professor in the college. We had students in her program actually had access to Oracle databases back then. And so at a student level, we were already working and playing with. And I know a lot of the students.
How did she get that for you? Did you have contacts at Oracle?
She somehow negotiated, I don't know the mechanics, she had somehow negotiated some sort of partnership with them, and I don't know if it was actually directly
academic as well as real world, it sounds like.
Yeah. She was also doing effectively consulting on the side to what was back then an electrical vehicle project, where they were driving data from the electrical
vehicle. What was her background in? Computers, or what was her background in?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was all.
She didn't have an accounting background.
I don't think so. No, I'm pretty sure she wasn't.
Do you need to have a very good math background to be in IT or information systems? Or could you just be a person who majors in accounting? Must you double major to get a job in advisory services at a CPA firm?
So I think it depends upon what you're doing. The way that I actually use math within what I do is to understand data reliability. And it's not so much math so much as it's statistics and really looking at data reliability and looking at, even on the audit side, when you look at materiality, there's math in the way that you're trying to compute whether something's material or not on the financial side. So math, I think, comes into play in those types of areas. Now, you could be doing consulting on the process diagrams, and there's not a ton of math that comes into the process side, unless we're like extrapolating how do we quantify the benefits of a particular thing, or how do we, you know, what are the cost savings? Like, there's some math that comes into there, but not a ton. Now, I caveat that though, because as we start to look at AI, artificial intelligence has a lot of math associated with it because it's learning, and it's learning based upon these patterns and it's analyzing data. And so it comes back to the statistics and the reliability and all of that type of stuff. Any of the data analytics that you're doing, which I think that's one of the differentiators for us in the accounting advisory spaces, is that we're often working with data, whether it's financial data or even increasingly non-financial data that we're integrating and bridging back to financial data. To perform the analysis and understand what analysis, you need to understand the math. For example, you need to know, like, you can't add two different sums or two different averages together to figure out the average of the entire population. There's some basic kind of math.
Are you a math whiz? Is that what you're very good at, math? You're very good in all your math courses.
I will say yes, in high school, like I was on the math team and did all that kind of nerdy stuff.
Calculus, trig, all those courses.
Yeah, but I never went past calculus. So, because we don't really use anything past that, you know, within our accounting space.
So if you don't have that math background as you had, okay, you'd have a lot of trouble being in advisory services. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that's true, because it's what I do is one slice of advisory, and there are other things in advisory. For example, if you're only doing process and internal controls consulting, there isn't a lot of math in that. It's more about interviewing people, understanding processes, being able to understand what are the opportunities for fraud. You know, there's some of that. Now, if I was doing data analytics to try and detect fraud, that's a lot of math. But the actual process internal control side is not. You know, when I look at the tax advisory side, tax advisory is helping people look at their income and perhaps the different financial plans and financial investment options. There's definitely math in that, but
that's not part of your bailiwick, tax services. That's a separate area, right?
Right.
Right. Now, you graduated with your accounting degree and information systems.
Yep.
And you started at PwC, all right, mm-hmm. which is a big four. And mm-hmm. did they actually have a department of that? And then did they train you a lot? Did they give you yep. training?
Yep. So at that point, they had it was actually a program. I don't think it exists anymore, called the Dual Track Program, where we went through both the training for the financial audit side and we went through the training for the IT audit side. And we actually worked on both sides as we went through busy season. So whereas most auditors only have one busy season, which is the same busy season as tax, I always had two. I had the upfront work in the IT audit and controls in the fall, and then I had the regular busy. So I kind of think of it as like crash courses. We got exposure to a lot more things really quickly in that moment.
And if they eliminated that program, how are they then training people in advisory services? What are they doing instead?
So a lot of what I see from talking to people that are in the advisory is that most people in advisory now are not going directly into advisory. So a lot of the advisory is people that already have experience that are getting hired. So sometimes it's people that maybe gone through audit or tax, left the firm.
They must have previous advisory experience.
No. So they would have been like audit or tax. Maybe they went into industry, right? And then they're coming back because now they have this broader experience, broader exposure, and they're coming back into advisory. That's probably the more successful one. You know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was the whole MBA craze that it was like, get your MBA and then go to advisory. Well, I think what people are realizing is that was still a bunch of theoretical knowledge, but they didn't have the actual know-how. And that's why we're seeing the shift into it's actually experienced hires. It's not to say, too, that people can't go directly into advisory, because I have seen people go that path. The ones that I have worked with that have gone directly into advisory, to me, are really not as strong because they don't have that exposure and that breadth of experience that really makes you a good advisor. Because when you're an advisor, what you're selling is your knowledge and your experience and your ability to, again, look at like these patterns from other things that have gone on and bring that into the current context.
So you're saying the people that are going into it now, fresh out of school, advisory, just aren't good at it, or they're not getting the training? Why aren't they as good as you when you got out?
It's really more of the lack of exposure. And so what made me good when I did it, I already had the year and a half of exposure to financial and IT audit. And from the IT side, the pure IT side, I had already been doing that, even though it was just as an intern, I'd been doing that for the last like 3 years before that. Right. So I already came with effectively 4.5 years of work experience in delivering different things. And I was just now doing it in a different context. And you know, there's a training program that people in advisory are going through. But the training program, again, it only teaches you so much. It's really this ability to know, how have other people approached this problem? How can this problem be solved in other situations? That's really the value of the advisory service.
Do the firms who hire people in advisory services today, do they have on-the-job training, or do they expect you just to jump in and be able to do the work?
That's a great question, because what I hear when I talk to a lot of the other partners and others is they want them to jump in and do the work. And part of that is because the salaries right now are so inflated that they're like, if I can't immediately get productivity out of this person, then this person is effectively a loss, going to create a loss for the company. But I think, and then I hear the partners then come back and criticize the schools and tell the schools like, hey, you're not getting these people ready for jobs and they can't come in and do work. And I think people forget that, you know, back in the day, even in the 90s, we went through the initial training. We were guided and mentored by someone that sat down with us and was like, this is how you do stuff. Well, with how compressed busy season is, with this craziness on productivity, and again, the salary inflations for profitability of jobs, I think a lot of that is like people don't have time to sit down and mentor the staff well.
Is there the salary inflation for all accounting or advisory services only?
All accounting, because I see the same complaint in audit and tax as well.
What are they paying them? Do you know what they're paying them now coming out of school? You know, with a 5-year degree and they haven't taken the CPA. What's the starting salary? I don't even know what the starting salary is.
The last one I heard, I think, is about 60,000 or 70,000.
Well, that's not a lot, considering that they work them a lot of overtime and they don't necessarily pay them for the overtime. So, is that true? I don't think they pay them.
That depends on the firm. So some firms do actually pay for that overtime.
They are. Okay.
It really depends. Yeah.
Because a lot of them say that they're including the overtime in that 60,000.
Right.
But you see, it goes back once again, 5-year degree in accounting. If I majored in finance right now, I don't know if you can answer that, but if I majored in finance or not, Can I get a higher starting salary today?
Finance might be one of those exceptions just because of the amount of money that's pouring into venture capital and the stock market and all that type of stuff, right? So that's another area that I think right now the salaries are probably inflated. But if you compare it to a lot of the other areas with only a four-year degree, I don't think the salaries are that high.
No, I think, once again, this is the problem in the profession. The accounting profession is because of the 150-hour rule, a lot of people say, you know, I'm not going to major in accounting and go for that fifth year. Yeah. First of all, a fifth year of education is expensive. You know what? I'll major in finance. It sounds like a sexier area, you know, finance. Yeah. And I only have to get a four-year degree. And I think the starting salaries are higher. Yeah. And I'm not sure, once again, I haven't been in the workforce a long time, but I talk to people. And I don't know if they work the overtime in finance that they do in, you know, like on an audit staff or, you know,
I think in the beginning they probably do if they're with especially one of these higher profile companies. But the biggest difference that I always tell people is that the accounting and the CPA is the starting point. So yeah, you might go into a finance route, but then where do you go from there, right? You're kind of in that finance seat, especially if you're going into the markets and with the markets or insurance. You're in that and you're in that for the rest of your life. Versus in the accounting side, CPA is the start. So from CPA, you can go into any of the specialties. So the CPA is effectively 2 years of work experience, the schooling, 2 years of work experience, right? And then you've got your passed the exam and you've got your CPA, but that's 2 years in. So then take another 3 to 5 years, and now you've got a whole bunch of other credentials that you can go for within fraud, within IT, within personal financial planning, within a CFO controller's role. Right, you can go into all of these other things. You could go into advisory services, become a consultant, and stay in auditor tax, but you could also stay in auditor tax. As you go into the private industry and you go into a CFO, into let's actually say a controller's role, which is still kind of the financial accounting, you could grow from there into more of the CFO role and become more of a strategic leader and help actually steer the direction of an organization. You know, and then even on the, I call it on the side of the CPA, because these are not mutually exclusive to CPA, but there's also the path, for example, to a certified internal auditor where you're a head of internal audit department, or on the other side, looking at things like government accounting, specializing in government accounting, and being able to work with your county or even federal government. Like CPA is just such the starting point, and all these other doors don't unlock unless you get through that first starting.
Yeah, I remember a professor at a university here said, the CPA is the union card to get into the union. And that's what you're saying in so many words.
Sort of, yeah.
How many people do you have working for you?
I have 12 people on my staff.
And what is their backgrounds? Do you only ask for people, you only hire people with experience in this?
Currently we do. So I will say that on our staff, we have several of us that are CPAs. In fact, actually, if I count real quick, there are four of us that are CPAs. I have one person that is an accounting MIS double, went and worked for Accenture, and then came over and started working with me. And then we have two other people that are accountants. They actually do our internal accounting and do a little bit of accounting for clients. And then we have an IT person as well. And actually on one other team, we have two people that are meeting conference planners because they help in our, they're in our training. So we've actually got a variety of skill sets, and it's representative of the type of work we do because we do business transformations. So we're working with accounting, finance, HR, IT, and then a lot of change is enacted through training and education. And so that's why we have that training and education side.
Where do you go to get your people?
The majority of what we get is through referrals. And a lot of it is, I am actually one of the top 100 influencers in the public accounting space.
What does that mean? You're one of the top 100 influencers. Can you tell us what that means?
Sure. The way I look at it is it means generally that people know who I am. And that I'm able to get a message out there that is touching a lot of people in our profession. And it's actually, to me, a very hard earned in that I actually have to do 30 to 40 speaking events a year. I speak all around the country and have started doing some international speaking as well. So it's a lot of flights. It's a lot of preparing and doing public speaking. It's a lot of also kind of looking at the big picture of what's going on and figuring out, what is going on and how do I help explain this to other people? And so when I speak in front of audiences, usually at state CPA society conferences, but also AICPA conference, I'm helping them understand what's going on in the world. And
advisory services.
In general. Because a lot of it's tied in the end to technology and the changes that technology is bringing in. But it's not just about technology. It's how do we use that technology to support business and business operation and improving business. And increasingly right now, it's also how do we create this greater sense of a holistic business approach. So not just business and profits, but the impact on the community, the impact on people. So it's required me to actually go back, for example, and do some additional graduate work in the HR area and organizational development to really look at what is this broader picture. So that's kind of the short on the top 100. It's a lot of the people that are very influential and impact perhaps policy or the way people think about accounting.
Is my name on that list? I'm just I don't think so. But anyway, we're in the top, podcast, right, Rob?
Yes, we are still the number one podcast for CPAs.
Number one podcast for CPAs, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I did not.
We're not paying you for this. You know that.
What? Wait, we better end right now.
All right, we'll give you the minimum. We have a minimum of, we give you 10 shekels, okay? All right, you have to go to Israel to cash those in now.
Okay.
Actually, I've had on some of the influencers, and I'm very impressed with what they've accomplished, really. And I'm glad you're one of them. I mean, that's terrific. I'm just wondering, I'm thinking this now. I'm listening to you and what your background is, what you've learned over the years. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, are the colleges really, I don't know if you mentioned this, are the colleges really keeping up to provide this source of employees so that the companies can get into these areas more?
So I'm going to say yes, because again, I did my degree in the mid 90s. I was in college from 93 to 97. And so the programs were already there. I took those courses. Those courses were the basis for what I am today. So I'm going to say that, because there's a lot of criticism that the colleges are not getting people ready for it. And I think that disconnect is not actually just on the college side, but it's within the employers and the salary inflation and all this other stuff that's going on. Like that's causing the employers to not get people ready for to make their staff efficient and make their staff be able to do a lot of what we do. Now, granted, you can hear already from my background that I am one of those overachievers. I was in high school, not in college, one of those straight A's. I started my firm at the age of 25 when I left PwC and in business. So I'm definitely one of those overachievers. But the foundation for doing what I do and what is needed is there, because it was there. And that's the education I keep pointing back to. Some of my colleagues will kind of joke at me because they'll go, when they see the way like I do my work papers and things, they'll go, gosh, that looks like college textbook. And I was like, yeah, it is, because that is the right way to do it for a lot of those things. And we come back to that, but then what layered onto that was the training I received at PwC, the training in audit, the training in IT audit.
Very important thing.
The training within the methodology of how to do consulting. So there's a college piece and then there's the employer piece. And I don't think enough employers are owning up to their part in this, that they need to be in. So if I was like, for example, giving advice to students, I would often tell them, ask them about the onboarding program, the training program. How are they going to get you ready to be in the workforce? Because if they don't have it, you don't want to be in that firm. It's also often now why I steer students towards the mid-tier firms rather than the big four or even some of the top 10. Because I'm like, when you go into big four and top 10, you're brought in, you go through this great training, but it's very narrow and it's very specific to the industry that they're planning to have you in. And you don't get the exposure that is the basis of what I do, is the exposure. So I was in the PwC Honolulu office. That was a 60-person or 80-person office. We got to touch a lot of things. We got exposed to a lot of things. And you're not going to get that in these big 300,000 person offices.
What's the AICPA doing? Are they pushing, I don't know who they would push, universities to get more prepared, to prepare people for this type of profession?
I do, and it's actually a really huge concern, and they've been kind of raising the red flag, like, hey, this is a problem area. We really need to, you know, talk about this, and we need to get students into the pipeline. Now, first of that is they're saying, you know, there's a decline in enrollees, and there's all this stuff, all these challenges with not having enough people. Well, the counterpoint to that, with me coming from the tech side, is, well, I'm looking at all these firms, and none of these firms are using technology that is available today to do what they need to do. And if more firms would adopt that technology, we wouldn't have as much need for as many staff. So that's one thing on that. But when we look at what the AICPA is doing, I actually just went to a conference in July where the AICPA got together with the state societies, and the AICPA was sharing some information about these trends in accounting graduates and then the number of graduates that are going to CPA. And again, we kind of look at this churn in the firms, and the fact that the firms do not have a lot of the firms do not have a healthy work environment. So when we look at that lack of that healthy work environment, I can see, like, why would students want to go into there? Unless they see this greater value proposition of the profession as a whole, they're not going to want to do that. And so that's why part of my mission is really about, how do we help students really see that CPA is the first stepping stone to a much broader career? And if you take the time and invest the time and put the hours in, the world's just going to open up for you.
I'm part of an approved course provider, and we meet with the AICPA. Did I mention that to you?
No.
Well, and it comes up usually at the end of the meeting. We meet in New York and the American Accounting Association annual meeting. But all we've heard lately is, anybody have any ideas how we can get more people in to become CPAs, take the CPA exam? I don't know if they have the answers or not. You know, I'm trying to get the president of the AICPA on this podcast because I'd like to talk to him about it. You know, what are they doing? You know, do they have a plan? There's been a serious decline in number of people in the past 10 years taking the exam. Okay, yeah. I think it was like 50%.
But I think that also though represents the true broadening of the profession, because I'll go 20 years ago, right, when I graduated, CPA was the path, and CPA was the key that opened up the path to all these other things. With the increase in internal audit, with the increase in IT audit, which leads towards cybersecurity, what I think we're seeing is more people take those alternate paths. And you don't have to have a CPA to go to those paths. But I can say from experience, when I work with people who are dual path, meaning they have the CPA background plus they have this other specialized knowledge, those are the ones that are really more powerful and have a lot more longer term potential, earning potential.
Are they going to the CMA instead of the CPA?
I think that's another place that we're seeing that difference as well. It was interesting though. I asked someone that had both the CMA and the CGMA, which is the AICPA's competitor CMA. And I told him, so why'd you get both? Like, why would you not just get one? And she actually told me, she said, well, they're very different. The CMA is very technical, and it's not technical IT, but technical accounting. And it also is very focused on its original core, which is the management or managerial accounting space. And the CGMA is really more about leadership, and it has more things about people than change and governance. And so it was interesting to hear from someone that had both, like, this was, and this person is one of the other ones that teaches a lot at the national level. You know, so I know she's taking a broader view at the,
Did you take a test to get the CGMA?
I did not. I was one of the ones that was grandfathered in when it was started.
Just like you are, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know how many people are taking the actual exam now that you can't get grandfathered in. Yeah. I mean,
oh, there's quite a bit.
Quite a few people taking that CGMA?
Yep. And I actually helped to write one of the modules for the new exam. So I wrote the module on digital transformation for the new exam. So it's a lot of, I think, really good content. I got to see the entire framework around it and what they're kind of doing in terms of what are they teaching them. So I think it's actually quite a powerful, not just exam, but all of the learning and the way that they're designing the learning to get you to be ready to pass that exam should be some really powerful content. Actually,
I wonder how many employers know what the CGMA is. I mean, I know the IMA, and I've had shows on this, but the IMA is constantly marketing, certification.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the AIC... I don't know if the AICPA is really marketing that CGMA as well as they could.
Well, I think that in whole is, you know, the AIC, one of the AICPA's challenges. You asked about whether or not they're changing the CPA and how they're addressing this decline in CPAs. Why is there so many things that the AICB has that are actually really great. Like I think CGMA, like I said, is really great. I'm also a former chair of the Information Management and Technology Assurance Committee, Executive Committee at the AICBA. We had some really great materials that help people understand cyber, that help people understand data, data analytics, but that word wasn't getting out there about it. And that again, I think is just one of those fundamental challenges that the AICBA doesn't seem to be able to get over.
No, they need to.
Right? How do you get people to know that there's all this great stuff, not just as CPA, but within the AICPA and as part of their membership?
Yeah, I mean, on this show, I constantly trying to convince people the CPA is the, you need that for your career, no matter what you're going to go into, because it gives you the mobility, flexibility. Yeah. And I'm doing that. I'm marketing that for the AICPA.
I think with what you're doing with having people like me and those of us that are kind of the non-traditional, you know, CPAs, that is to me the greatest way to do that. Because I think what we need is we need students to be able to see that there are these alternate career paths, that there are those of us out there that aren't traditional. And I'm not saying that we don't need the traditional, because we also need the traditional. I cannot do my consulting if I cannot rely upon the financial information, which is what the auditor is actually helping them do. And if we're trying to figure out a direction for a company, if we don't have an understanding of the tax implications, which is going to come from the tax side and whoever's helping them with their tax return and planning, like it's bringing all these efforts together that really lets us build a comprehensive plan for.
Donnie, thank you very much for being on this podcast, and you shared a lot of good information. All right. Hope to have you on again, if you don't mind coming on. What are you doing tomorrow? No, actually, no, we would like, I think what you gave is a lot of good information about, you know, what it's like to go into advisory services, maybe how you can get into it. And I think, you know, if I had to go into accounting today, I'd probably want to go into consulting. Anyway, take care and safe travels wherever it's taking you. And we'll talk again sometime. All right.
Sounds great. Thank you. Again.
Once again, I'd like to thank you for being the best part of CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to hear on the show, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your story, we want to hear from you. Send me an email to the studio at podcast@YeagerCPAReview.com. If you're enjoying the content that we're providing, we'd greatly appreciate it if you'd submit a review to the Apple iTunes podcast app to let us know how we're doing. If you're in the market for a CPA review course, or simply want to find out more about the CPA exam and what Yeager has to offer, check out YeagerCPAReview.com or call our office and we'll answer any questions you may have. The link and the phone number will be in the description of this podcast. Here at Team Yeager, we're excited to tell you about our new Yeager CPA Review subscription format. It's the same great Yeager CPA Review course that you know and love on an all-new month-to-month, no-commitment subscription format. Check it out today. Once again, my name's Rob Medford. I'm your executive producer and director here at the Yeager Studios. And until next time, take care and be audit you can be.